Today, we're going to probe the tag memics of scribes at one of the most lauded newspapers in the land. We hope you don't eschew our story as we drill deep into... Uh-oh. It's the New York Times Grammar and Style Police. Phil Corbett, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you.
We should actually say you're the Associate Managing Editor of Standards, and you write the After Deadline blog. But you are really, is that accurate? You're sort of the policeman of grammar and usage?
I guess I might use the word arbiter or something like that. Policeman sounds a little strict, but yes, I'm the one who oversees our style book and who tries to give people advice on words and usage and grammar.
Well, and we could use you. So that first couple sentences, I'm counting like four words that I'm trying to strike from our writing.
I think I detected a few cliches there. Yeah, some of what I would call journalese is the sort of words that seem to only pop up in newspaper writing or maybe sometimes on the radio, but that real people don't use. I think I heard a probe there instead of investigate.
That's sort of something we try to tell ourselves here. If you wouldn't say it, don't write it. Another one, I don't think I love the Times, but I don't think I'd ever call you lauded.
Right. There are certain words that are not just journalese, but I think are specifically Timesese. They seem to be words that appear more in the New York Times than anywhere else. A word like royal, particularly political writers seem to like that. You know, the new accusations roiled the campaign. Those sorts of cliches we try to steer writers away from.
What about eschew, meaning, you know, to avoid something? And I avoided that word because I thought it sounded like a sneeze.
A colleague actually pointed out to me just recently, and I did a little item in my After Deadline blog about that word. That's one of those sort of overly fancy words that I think sometimes we use, I guess, because we like some variety. Maybe a writer wants to show off a little bit. But that's not a normal word, I wouldn't say.
And yet I see here that you've tracked this, and eschew, God bless you, was used 19 times in just the first month of this year, about 200 times a year.
That seems like a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Another one that came up, somebody pointed out to me about a year ago. They said, I'm seeing kerfuffle everywhere I looked. I said, come on, that can't be true. Kerfuffle, nobody says kerfuffle. But I looked, and we used it a couple of dozen times last year. Kerfuffle, meaning sort of a fuss or a flap. 10 years ago, we hardly used it at all. I think I saw it maybe seven times back in 2000. So there's definitely a phenomenon of sort of fad words that all of a sudden you notice a word has caught on.
It's viral, like a meme, like an idea on the web. But I just have to say, because our listeners are probably saying, come on, Robin, I'm guilty of kerfuffle. I love that word.
Oh, you like that word.
Yeah.
It does have a sound to it.
Less than a fight, but, you know, a little more than a spat.
Sort of a dust-up.
Right. Dust-up. That's probably another one we shouldn't use.
Pushback is another one that I've noticed in the last year or two. Pushback in the sense of opposition, you know, nobody like runs into opposition or resistance anymore. They get pushback. I checked last year, we had used close to 100 times, and 10 years ago, it didn't appear at all. So these things catch on and become cliches.
I think another political one recently I was noticing is baked in. Like, that's baked in the candidate or baked in the story.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I'll have to check on that. I did a search, I'd find that popping up more and more in the last year or so.
Right. How do you do this? How do you track words?
We have a function on our website. Not all our readers might know about it, but where you can actually get a dictionary definition. If you double-click on a word that you don't recognize, you get a dictionary definition. And we track what words people are clicking on to look up. So for the past few years, I've had one of my technology colleagues compile a list for me because I thought it would be interesting to see what words stump New York Times readers. You know, we think of our readers as very intelligent and well-read. I think they are. But still, there are certain words that we writers can't resist using, even though it seems like a lot of our readers don't know what they mean. So I've done a list the past few years. I call it the 50 Fancy Words List. Inchoate is one that we use a lot. Inchoate means not yet formed or unformed. Solipsistic, that's not a word you expect to see in your morning newspaper necessarily, but we use it. Solipsistic, peripatetic.
Quotidian instead of ordinary.
That's one that I noted in After Deadline just a few weeks ago. Somebody had pointed that out to me, and I realized it was true. It seems like if you want to say ordinary, probably you could just stick to ordinary. Sometimes we can't resist trying to show off a little bit with foreign words, and often they're confusing to readers, and frankly, often they're confusing to us because we misspell them or we misuse them. So I always say, if you're going to use a foreign word, you better be darn sure you get it right. Schadenfreude is a good example of that. Schadenfreude,
oh, yeah.
For a while, that was like the word of the month.
That seems to be out now. That's, you know, taking some satisfaction out of somebody else's misfortune.
Exactly.
Seems to have fallen by the wayside. Some might say, well, why not elevate our use of words? Why not throw in quotidian?
Well, you know, when I've done these posts about fancy words, it's funny because I do get that sort of a comment from a lot of our readers. They say, no, we don't want the Times to dumb things down for us. We want to be challenged. So when I talk to my colleagues about this, I don't say don't use these words, but just be thoughtful about it. Don't do it to show off. If it's the perfect word to use, then maybe you can. But sometimes there's a way of doing it, sort of deftly supplying enough context so that somebody won't be confused.
And by the way, we want our listeners, go to hearnow.org, bring it on words you think I use too much, or, you know, words we could simplify. Go ahead, let us know, hearnow.org. But let's move on to the cliches. One of your favorites is a Dickens reference. Tell us about that.
Yes, that was a headline cliche that we noticed, and I would say the all-time most overused headline device is a reference to the Dickens novel A Tale of Two Cities. Dozens of times a year, we have a headline that's a tale of two this, a tale of two that, a tale of two sandwiches, a tale of two condos. We even had one that was a tale of two Dickenses. I guess that's sort of clever. But after I did an item on this, one of my colleagues was intrigued and decided to look back, try to find when was the very first time a New York Times headline writer had relied on that device. Want to take a guess?
No.
1877.
Oh, I was going to go back to like 1910. 1877.
1877. That was only 7 years after Dickens died. We had a headline in the New York Times, A Tale of Two Continents. So I guess for that headline writer, it was sort of like a pop culture reference, you know? But for everybody since then, it's just been a cliche.
What's another? What are some other cliches that we might not even think of?
Well, there are words that readers point out to me. One that seems to really annoy people, iconic. A lot of times it appears in the Times in quotes. You know, other people use it, but we use it ourselves too. And it's one of those words that can become devalued. Everything is iconic.
Do you get into knockdown dragouts with anybody?
There's always a little creative tension, I think, between editors and writers. I get a little pushback now and again. But frankly, I also get a lot of feedback from my colleagues.
I'm sorry, Phil. You get a little
feedback.
What every now and then?
Sorry, pushback. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Feedback, pushback. That sort of jargon, it's hard to avoid. You hear it, and then it becomes part of your own speech.
We know. It's hard. It's hard. Phil Corbett, Associate Managing Editor of Standards and Enforcer of the Style Guide at the New York Times. What a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin. It was a pleasure.